survey of Indian thinking about the problem shows that the Vedas in general seem to teach an externalist view of morality, where only acts performed are of any real significance. Right and wrong have no sanction of the inner character or motive. The simple sanction behind them is that of the gods. Sin is regarded as simply disobedience to the commands of a god like Varuna. One is free from sin not by changing his heart, his intention, or motive, but by simply repeating rituals directed toward the gods. The Vedas in general seem to give us an ethics of overt duties rather than inner virtues, an ethic of doing rather than of being, and all duties are clearly directed towards worldly ends such as health, length of life, offspring, etc. So, the author here is explaining that in the Vedas we find that there are many kinds of rituals or purificatory sacrifices. And if you do something wrong, then you don't have to worry about the motive that caused you to do that wrong. You just have to do another ritual to purify yourself. You know, you create some sinful activity or something. Okay, well, you go to the Brahmin. What's prescribed? And he says, well, if you do this, what is this? The example we have in of Subhuti Roy, he was made like a Muslim. What can I do to purify myself? Well, drink ghee. Just nothing to do with the internal cleansing, internal motivation. Just another type of activity or sacrifice to purify you. And then you go on without having to worry about this internal idea. This is described actually at the beginning of the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's elaborated a little bit there what this Kaitava Dharma is. Because don't you see, get the idea how this is cheating? Well, you know, I'm going to do this bad, but I know that if I do that, it'll purify me. So, hey, you know, why not? I'll just do this and I'll do that. You can, if you know the system, you can cheat. It's like that. If you know how the system works, you can cheat the system. Or you think you can cheat the system. That's why this idea of Kaitava Dharma, of cheating, comes in. And as I said, this is described at the beginning of the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Maharaj Pariksit has just heard from Sukadeva Goswami about all the hellish types of punishments and all the hells that you can go to that are described at the end of the fifth canto. And if you read those descriptions, there are a lot of things that involve like intention. Like if you purposely don't receive a guest, or you purposely receive a guest and you're looking in with harsh eyes and everything like this, there's a tremendous reaction for that purposeful, intentional action on your part. But what does Sukadeva Goswami describe to Maharaj Pariksit when he asked him how can people be free from all these things? The first thing he says to him is that, well, the Vedas prescribe different processes called prayaschitta, atonement, that you can undertake that will save you from having to go to all those hells. In other words, the same idea, just perform a ritual. Prayaschitta means perform a ritual, atonement. I did some sin, I can do this, and everything will be okay. I won't have to suffer the reaction. I won't have to go to these hellish planets there. But Maharaj Pariksit, being a Bhagavad Dharmi, as described in this verse, he understood, no, intention is important. And he said, well, it doesn't make sense what you're saying to me, because that's just like an elephant that bathes in the river and then comes out and throws dirt all over themselves again. It doesn't make sense. How can one ritualistic activity that's violated be corrected by another ritualistic activity? It doesn't make sense. And by speaking like this, he actually pleased Sukadeva Goswami, and then Sukadeva Goswami told him about the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, the whole pastime of Ajamiya is described after that. To get the point that your intention is important here, and you, if you perform bhakti yoga, that is declaring an intention to devote yourself to the Supreme Lord, and that is the process by which you uproot this desire to continually perform these type of ritualistic activities, one after another after another, as described in the passage I read, mainly for material ends, like health, wealth, family, like that. And so that is a very significant difference between the Bhagavat Dharmina and Kaitava Dharma. Kaitava Dharma being this kind of cheating religion, in which really, who gets cheated in Kaitava Dharma? Does the Supreme Lord get cheated, or do we cheat ourselves, mainly? We cheat ourselves by being constantly throwing ourselves in this cycle of repeated birth and death. So, one thing, intention, it can change another one thing, dharma, into the right goal, but misused, it can cause a lot of different problems. And just one final point about Prabhupada's purport here, because the second half of the purport he talks about impersonalists. Now, impersonalists are specifically targeted by Srila Prabhupada. And why do you think that is? I mean, a lot of times I've heard some talk, people, oh, Prabhupada's so heavy on the impersonalists, you know? Why are you so heavy on the impersonalists? Well, it gets back to the same issue of intention. Because what's the intention of the impersonalist? The intention of the impersonalist is, you know, as Prabhupada has described, things like, they insult Krishna. You have no hands, you have no eyes, you're blind, you're lame, you're dumb, you're deaf. You know, so it's like they're personally criticizing the Lord. And so, naturally, someone that loves the Lord, is they're not going to, you know, want to stand by and hear the Lord, you know, insulted in that way. But this is one aspect of why it's such a personal thing for all devotees of the Lord to strongly oppose impersonalism. Because it's an insult to our Lord. And also it's part of this cheating as well. It's part of this cheating as well. Because as Prabhupada explains here in the purport, why do people turn to that? They turn to that out of frustration. They have so many desires to enjoy through karma, through jnana, through yoga. And when those things are frustrated, then they say, oh, the Supreme is impersonal, and I'll seek, again, a personal, selfish end. I'll seek salvation. I'll seek relief from all this suffering by merging into the impersonal Lord. It's a little bit of a cheating thing. Again, you know the system. It doesn't work for you, and therefore, you know, you have a secret, one last attempt by becoming one with the Supreme Lord, denying your personality, denying the personality of the Lord. So it's also very distasteful for a Bhagavad Dharmi, one who is engaged in this path to develop loving devotion unto the Supreme Lord. So, these are some aspects of Prabhupada's purport here, and concepts of dharma, and how important our intention is in executing devotional service. The stronger our mind and senses and our being is fixed on intentionally serving the Supreme Lord, the more the Lord reciprocates with us in that way. Therefore, we're advised to 24 hours daily engage in this practice of sadhana bhakti and to fix our mind on Krishna in that way. Is there any comments or questions about these subject matters?
Yeah.
Yes?
I think another reason why Prabhupada is so
That's another cheating, right? It's another cheating to mislead people, to lead people away from the real devotion to the Supreme Lord through an impersonal path. So, yes, that's very good. Okay. Mara?
It is a thought that intention is something very deep, and sometimes it may happen that we think we're in the right, and we are not. In Spain, we have seen, of course, that hell is full of good intentions.
The road to hell is paved by good intentions.
For example, Hitler, when he was doing what he was doing, he was thinking he was doing right. Anyway, it's just a thought, because sometimes you make me convince, okay, I'm doing it right.
Right, well, that's interesting you mention that, because I was listening to a tape of Radhanath Swami yesterday. And in this tape, he was explaining that that what was he explaining? I forgot what he was explaining. But the point is that by association of devotees, we can understand that we're rightly motivated or not. That's why association of devotees... Well, that, he was talking about Kunti Devi, yes. And he was saying about devotees, that devotees, they only see the bad qualities in themselves. They only see the bad qualities in themselves. Therefore, Kunti was saying like that, you know, we are women, we're less intelligent, how can we understand you? Why she's saying that? Because that's how a devotee sees. And so a devotee will always see that way about themselves and therefore not get caught with the pride of thinking that my intention doesn't have to be, you know, checked with the devotees. I was speaking in a class recently about how devotee, what he does before he executes his duties, he seeks confirmation from the society of devotees, from higher authorities. And so a devotee always thinks of himself that, well, I have no devotion, not that I have this great plan, I'm going to do it, it doesn't matter what anybody says, that's correct. No, that's not how a devotee thinks. He thinks, well, let me just check my ideas out with my god brothers, with my senior devotees. And in that way, I can understand if my intention is in line with true principles of Bhagavad Dharma. So that's a safeguard for us from falling into that kind of a trap. Gauri?
Kind of coming to that question. Like, there is saying in Krishna, also the path to hell is paved by good intention. Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, if we come into the association of devotees, we have so many contaminations in our own mind, in our own heart. And so, therefore, we might not say that, you know, our intentions are completely pure or completely right. However, if we come into the association of devotees, we come under the shelter of the lotus feet of a guru. We come under the shelter of Srila Prabhupada. And he's engaging his organization in certain ways, and we've become purified by becoming part of that. And we therefore need to surrender to that. You need to surrender to that and become part of it and take the direction. Now that implies sort of in a larger scale, as well as personally. Personally, we deal with our anarthas through our individual practice, as well as in serving the mission of our guru. And so, taking shelter means being protected from that. And again, that's how a devotee thinks. He thinks, oh, my heart is so full of contamination. What am I going to do? Well, let me take shelter of others, in association of others, and in that society, be protected from these things, these anarthas in my heart. The association of devotees actually protects us from the anarthas in our heart. And at the same time, gives us a chance to purify them by engaging in the process, as described here, of rules and regulations strictly according to principles 24 hours daily. So that's a shelter for us. It's not, therefore, it describes in Bhagavad Gita the regulative principles of freedom. It's not something that, you know, regular, it's like some noose around our neck or something regular, but it's actually the method of our salvation is being in an association of devotees where these things are followed. So that protection is offered.
In Kali Yuga, we don't get simple reactions for our thoughts. So how does this relate to intentions? Because those seem to be internal.
Right. Well, I've heard that debated, whether it's we're completely free from reactions of our thoughts or not. It does seem to affect us in certain ways. If we're meditating, was it here somebody was giving a class, I think? I don't know, someplace I was hearing a class recently. If you're meditating, oh no, it was Nagaraj who was giving a class in the lecture, and he said, you know, if you're meditating all day, you know, some sinful activity, you know, how can you say it doesn't, you know, affect you? You know, it may affect you in some way. But in terms of the point about whether, how that relates to our intentions, our intentions, again, will lead us to some action. And so when we start taking action, then we can say, okay, then things become activated there. We are fortunate, we get the benediction that we're not so much tied to just the mental conception in this age. But if we have a little determination, a little intention to do the right thing, and then we actually do it, then we're on the path. And in that sense, we are kind of in this idea of being... that acts count. That acts count. And I think that you'll find the most senior devotees, and probably even in Srila Prabhupada's instructions, where they encourage people to just don't stay on the fence. You know, well, I'm thinking about being a devotee. It's a nice lifestyle. We all know people like that. They kind of stay on the fence for years and years without making a determined step toward Krishna. But no, the encouragement is, no, make a determined step toward Krishna. In other words, act in that way. Go beyond just the intentions of the mind. So, I think I'd like that. Yes?
In answer to her question, couldn't you say that in Kali Yuga, the Lord doesn't give reaction to our thoughts, but we sort of make our own reaction because, like you said, if we're meditating all day on some simple activity, then we're going to do something that, you know, we're going to cause something wrong to happen. So we're really making our own reaction that the Supreme Lord doesn't.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Another way, is another more merciful way, is that we may not be held accountable for the bad things, but if there's some good thing, then we get credit for that, and it's, you know, encouraged. Okay, you know, the Lord fans a flame. Come on, you have a little thought to do something right. Well, take advantage. You know, he'll push us further. So that's Lord Chaitanya's mercy. You know, just helps us, you know, despite our own faults. Anything else? Yes?
I'm just thinking that in Kali Yuga, you know, there's so many shots, the space between what you think and what you do, and something you really control the mind, so it's naturally embarrassing. If you get a good thought, it's a perfect shadow to actually
control the mind. Yeah, mind's control. But the association of devotees and the 24-hour engagement, as is mentioned here, these are all things that are meant to help us, encourage us to through control of the mind. And association of devotees is so important in this regard. Association of devotees is so important. Without it, I mean, it's really not possible to execute devotional service because of the powerful mind. It just takes us away. Maharaj was giving that seminar on yoga the other night. You think about the concentration. It's one of the cities, isn't it? You get the city just to be able to concentrate, you know, like a mystic perfection, just to be able to concentrate. Sit down for 5 minutes, you think your mind's going here, there, all over the place. You know, you can't concentrate in this age of Kali because the mind's so difficult. So it becomes a mystic city just to be able to fix your mind on something. That's the influence of the age of Kali. So, 8:30, we should end there. Rajarashima Bhagavatam.